I'd actually like to pray also, if y'all don't mind. Lord, I just thank you. Thank you for this opportunity. You've brought me here today, and I truly have nothing to give. But you've given me this life, and my desire is just to lay it back down. So I pray that you will use it in any way you see fit. In Jesus' name. So, I don't know if y'all saw my buddy John last night. Yes. He broke down a little bit up here. And I'm like, wow, Lord, how do you take a stone-hearted guy like that and break his heart? If that's what you do to a guy like that, what hope do I have up here? I'm in trouble. Matthew 21:44 says, "And the one who falls on this stone will be broken to pieces. And when it falls on anyone, it will crush him." So we have two options there. And I don't want to be crushed. So Lord, give me brokenness. This whole experience being up here is not to be cliche, but it's surreal because, you know, I started coming here in the 90s. I went through the junior high group here, the high school group here. And then about 17 years ago, started bringing my family. And I've sat where you're sitting and I've watched many accomplished speakers, Major Thomas, Dave DeWitt, Kevin Ring, and I've always sat there with the assumption, man, these guys have it all together. They've made it, and they're finishing the race. But it's just the journey. They're in the midst of their journey, and so that's where I'm speaking from, is from my journey. I talked to y'all about. That's my hope this week, is to share that with you. And so definitely not speaking from a place of anywhere that I've arrived, but from a journey that I'm currently on. So, like any journey, the best place to start is the beginning. And my beginning is truly not my beginning, but like you heard John talk about, it was my father. My father made that decision to leave Atlanta in 1980 and come to Houston with his family. And that was a step of faith. And it was a step of faith with an eternal hope. And it was an act of love for him to come lay his life down. Now, I know God didn't need my dad to do that, because ultimately God had a plan for the hearts of the men of Houston, the men and women, the families of Houston. And whether my dad answered that call or not, God's purpose would have gone forward. But because of that, I get to partake in it. And so I'm thankful. Sorry. So, my early years were what you're seeing here. It was conferences, Bible camps, seminars. I traveled with my dad, went to a bunch of different places, watched him speak, watched him meet with men. And that probably sounds like a great environment to grow up in. Because it was. It was awesome. But there's another... I left my water by you, Craig. There's another side of that. You see, I was also born into a great spiritual battle. You see, the adversary can't look into the hearts of men like God can, but he can definitely evaluate their actions. And I'm sure that he looked at my dad's decision to say, I'm coming to Houston, and take that step of faith, and then evaluate, well, what is the gain? Well, there is no gain. It looks like it's going to come at great cost. And you look at something like that in his position, and he has to say, send everything you got. So, although it was a great upbringing, it was definitely a battle. So I put my faith in Christ at about probably 9 to 10 years old. And by the time I was 13 or 14, I'd probably done it 3 or 4 more times. I'd probably been baptized 4 times. I was kind of in a repetitive process of trying to work this out in my life. I never had a problem believing in God. I have a hard time understanding how you can't believe in God. To me, I can't stand up on places like Chapel on the Hill and look out at God's creation and think that's an act of randomness that came about by chaos. Creation speaks for itself, in my opinion. See, I don't believe that randomness moves towards order as evolution would teach, but towards chaos. And this is not a chaotic environment. This is an environment that works well. So we moved to Cyprus when I was about 11 years old, and that's where major changes came for me. I had a pretty strong group of friends. I grew up next to my neighbor when I was young, and so that's kind of all I knew. We lived in a cul-de-sac, and I had a very comfortable place that I was. And then moving to Cyprus at 11 years old, it was a whole different friend group, people that had... Oh, I see the problem. This doesn't fit. There we go. Yeah, that was kind of encouraging. I'm sorry, Scott, but if all I have to do is blow out my knee to get a replacement, at least I have an out. So yeah, moving to Cyprus was difficult because I was entering into a whole new friend group, relationships that were already established, and you know, I played baseball. The teams were already, they'd been playing with each other since they were kids, so I just struggled there. And that struggle led me to a reliance on drugs and alcohol by the time I was probably 12 or 13. By 14, I was in a mental hospital. And then by 15, I was on to rehab or a reform school. I tell my kids it's the school for gifted and talented children in New York. So now that they're older, they know what the school for gifted and talented children was. So I had a core problem that was separating me from God. See, I wanted things my way. So my belief in God, even though I believed it to my core, was not enough. I didn't believe God. I didn't believe that I could be content or happy in a life that wasn't run my way. So my teen years were a blur of drug addiction and alcohol. I dropped out of high school after my third freshman year because I'm no quitter. And I moved out on my own when I was 17. My addiction in this process worsened. I began selling drugs. We were making trips to Mexico back and forth continually just to keep our sales going and our addictions going. At about 19 years old, I met my first serious girlfriend, Jada. And ended up moving in with her family and her family's home. Actually, the week that I moved out of my apartment, it was raided by the DEA. It's not tears of sadness. It's just overwhelming to me the amount of mercy God has had. So I moved in with Jada, and that was not good. It was not a good situation. See, her family was very well off, and we had an unlimited budget at that point. They gave me the keys to the BMW, and they gave Jada the credit card. And so the next 5 years was spent in an unlimited budget of party. And so we went pretty hard. Running from God is something we all do. Jonah used a boat, and I used drugs and alcohol. About 3 years into our relationship, Jada was maturing at a much faster rate than I was and starting to pull away from that type of lifestyle, and I was not ready to yet. And so we started growing apart, even though I still lived there, lived in the house. I was still selling drugs, and because of this, the party was kind of always where I was at, and I became unfaithful in my relationship to Jada, began cheating on her a lot. And our whole friend group knew it. Everybody knew it but Jada. And that eventually came to light, and it was devastating for her. It really, you know, I really saw the pain that caused her, my unfaithfulness. And so it kind of shook me awake too, because I was like, I don't want this, you know. This is I love this person, but the way my love was expressed ended up in pain and hurt and sorrow. So somehow, in my manipulative ways, I convinced Jada to take me back. And so she did take me back. We ended up getting an apartment together. And I remember one night, she didn't want to go out. And I told her, I'm just going to go to the bar across the street. I didn't tell her where I was going, actually. I just told her I was going to the bar. And like usual, you know, I probably told her I'll be home by midnight. So probably 2 o'clock in the morning, she's probably looking for me at this point, because I just didn't ever do what I said I was going to do. And so she comes out looking for me, and she found me. She opened the car door in the parking lot, and there I was with another girl. And I saw it. I saw it on her face. I saw the hurt and the pain and the devastation of it. And so I went back to my apartment, and she had my things sitting on the front porch. And so I gathered my things, And I hopped in my car and I drove to another apartment complex and I sat down on a step and I just kind of laid back and looked up at the sky. And, you know, I think for the first time ever, I saw the circular pattern of destruction that I was on. I saw it, and I'd always made the excuse of, well, you know, we're teenagers now. It's when you start to have fun and party. Well, not me, but everyone else graduated high school. It's time to party. We're getting into college. It's time to party. And I just started to see it. It's always going to be there. There's this circular pattern of destruction, and I'm in the center of it. I'm going to be saying it at 30. I'm going to be saying it at 35. I'm always going to have an excuse for doing what I'm doing. And so it really made me feel empty. And so I laid back and I looked up at the sky and I said, God, I don't want to think about how to fix this, how to change it, how to manipulate Jada into winning her back. I don't want to think about any of that this time. In fact, I don't want to have anything to do with my life anymore. If you can do anything with my life, you can have it. But if you can't, take me off of this earth. I don't want to live anymore. There was no beam of light that came down from the sky that night and hit me, rejuvenated me. But it was heartfelt. It was probably the first heartfelt thing I'd said in a long time. I worked at Willie's. If you're a Houstonian, you know what that is. And so I remember the next day I was at work and I was typing in my order on the micro screen, and my buddy came up to me and he said, "Hey, bro, so and so's parents are out of town. Her and her friend are going to be over there. You know, I've got this girl. You can hang out with this girl." And when he said it, I thought, "Man, that sounds horrible. Why would we want to take advantage of them like that?" And it just, I was like, what the heck was that? It was like a piece of morality. I've never heard that before or experienced that. And it really was. It took me off guard so hard that just to care for another person, worry about how they may feel about something, I knew it was so awkward that I knew something was going on in my heart, in my life. I could feel it. I could see it. So, from there, thankfully my sister said that I could move in with her and her husband, and so I took a room at her house, and I started going to a Metro Bible study that's, I think it's at First Baptist, so it's a young singles group, and I started going there. And one night I was there, and the teacher was Vody Bachum, and he was speaking on love. And I told you my upbringing. I've been in these all my life. I've been in conferences and Bible camps. I've heard the greatest speakers ever. But I've never had something speak to me like it did that night. And I think it's because it was on love, and I knew what love looked like in my life. I knew I loved Jada, and I knew what that love looked like. I knew I didn't have the capacity to love anybody. So I went home that night, and the words were so impactful that he spoke to me or they, I say spoke to me because that's how it felt like. There were probably 500 people in the room, but it was like he was speaking to me. And so he was reading out of 1 Corinthians, and so I thought, you know what? I'll just read 1 Corinthians. So that's what I did. I just started reading, and I started in chapter 1, and I'm not a reader. Like, I hear people say the term, like, that's an easy read. I don't even know what that means. I have no idea what that means. But anyways, I guess I do, because this is the first time 1 Corinthians was an easy read. It was weird. Like, and that's not an easy read. To me, reading it now, I don't think 1 Corinthians is an easy read. But that night, for whatever reason, it was flowing in. And I was like a sponge, just sucking it up. And it was awesome. And so about this time, I mentioned earlier about the spiritual battle that I was born into and that had been the defining part of my life. So about that time, I was, after I finished reading, I was laying there, and my sister's dog started barking at the front gate. That's the only time. The dog was blind and deaf. And so the only time the dog barked is when someone was coming into the house. And so it was like, I mean, I got back from Metro, which, so it was probably, it had to have been 11:30 or something. So it was late. And I was like, who would be coming to the house at that time? And so I'm laying there, and I start to feel the covers on the bed being pulled down off of me. And so it's an upstairs room, and the only person up there is my sister and her husband. And so I'm like, okay, I get it. I move in my sister. She's going to come in and mess with me. And so the covers are being pulled off. And so I grab the covers, and I'm like, I'm going to show her. Little brother is going to show her, because I was in the, you know, I wasn't selective on my drugs. I did everything. So I also did steroids, and so I was huge. And so I'm not just going to rip the covers out of our hands. I'm going to pull her through the wall. And so I grab the covers to yank her like she's never been yanked before, and they get ripped out of my hands. You got more of this if I run out? Yeah. So the covers get ripped out of my hands, and I sit up. It's still pretty full, but I don't think it's full enough. Thank you. I don't know if it's really helping, but at least it gives me something to do for a second. I take a drink. So the covers get pulled out of my hands, and I go to sit up. And as soon as I go to sit up, I'm thrown back on the bed, and I start getting choked out. And I look around, and it was like an evil presence. It was like an evil presence of darkness had entered the room right there. And I was terrified. And so one of the things I'd read in 1 Corinthians that evening was that God would not put me through anything that I couldn't bear, and that He would provide for me a way to stand up under it. And so I called out to God, and I said, Lord, give me a way to stand up under this. Immediately, it was like a scroll being rolled up, like this darkness, this presence just left the room, and I was able to sit up. And I knew at that moment that God had responded to what I said. And so for the first time in my life, I understood I had a personal Savior in my life that responded to me. That changed everything for me. I called one of my first phone calls was to Major Thomas. He had taken a real interest in my life. I used to go spend time with him in the summer. It's funny, when I was going through, when I was preparing for this, I kind of have like a memory box of pictures. And I found three letters from Major Thomas to me when I was a kid. I was like, man, that guy knew thousands of people. Came across kids all the time. And he took time out of his life to make me feel significant. It's amazing. So I called him and I told him, Major, I've given my life to Christ. And he said, oh, Paul, that's great. You need to come to one of my schools. And so, at 25 years old, 2 weeks from this point, I was in Canada. So this is like a major shift. It's like a major shift in my life, you know? I mean, just a couple months earlier, I'm strung out. And then all of a sudden, I'm in Canada with people that have devoted their life to Christ since they were kids. I mean, you talk about a reality shift. I don't know if you know, the school in Canada is on Thetis Island. Thetis Island is a small island in between Vancouver and Vancouver Island. And that's all that's there, is this Bible school. And so you wake up in the morning and you see the mountains and the ocean and you're with God. And that's it. So, I mean, you talk about a polar shift from the way I was living and where I was living to now that God just picked me up and put me in this place to be with Him. It was unbelievable. So, from there, I came back to Houston. And pretty soon after that is when I met my wife. And I kind of just wanted to get a start on things, get a start on the Christian life, do what Christians do, get my wife, work a job, have some kids, go to church, do the Christian thing. Now I was ready to do things God's way, or what I had determined God's way was, which is really my way of doing things God's way. So Laura's an amazing person. She's an amazing wife and mother. I listened to my dad when he told me how to pick my wife, or how he'd say, check her teeth. He said, Paul, don't get a woman that's going to be running around at the bars, and don't get a woman that's going to drain your bank account. I knocked it out of the park. See, Laura is unbelievable in both those categories. She's extremely frugal, and you would never catch her running around at the bars. But what my dad didn't tell me is, Paul, find somebody that you have something in common with. Somebody that you're slightly compatible with. Maybe share some hopes and dreams together. So in my attempt to do things the Christian way, we got some marriage counseling. We took the Berkman questionnaire. It's not a test. And then we went and had that Berkman run against each other. I think we have a lot of Berkman speakers in here, but basically, I'll just break it down quickly for those of you that don't know. It's just another personality questionnaire that you take, and you run them against each other, and then you can kind of see, do you work with this person? So, you know, most marriages, when you're working well, you usually have 3 to 5 core differences, and you guys work together on those. Well, I think Laura and I ended up with 10. 13? I don't think it's 13. I think there's only like 14 total. Okay, it's a lot. It should have been enough to say, we probably shouldn't do this. But let me tell you what we do have in common. We are both high challenge. And that means when someone says, you cannot do that, we say, watch. So Laura and I are both high challenge. We share that. Perfect. It's time to go to the altar. We got our stamp of approval. Actually, he told us, you'll never make it. It's not going to happen. And it's going to fail. That's what we were told. He did, however, say, in the off chance that you guys are able to make this work, you'll have an amazing marriage. Because you have so many differences that if you can learn to appreciate them and work together in them, you're strong where she's weak, and she's strong where you're weak. But it's not going to happen. So you would think at this point, after all God had brought me through and saved me from in my life, that I would have started to believe God more. I did believe that God's plan was better, but I still believe that doing it my way was going to work out best. It was my way of retaining control. That's a very scary way to enter a marriage. So, to nobody's surprise, Laura and I were on a crash course down a mountain in a burning car with a mountain lion inside of it. My dad told us, and my dad, I mean, he's been with a lot of people. He's been doing this a long time, and he's seen a lot of marriages. And he said, Paul, yours is the worst I've ever seen. He wasn't kidding. It was just that bad. This is the point that we were being told, you're in the honeymoon stage. Enjoy every minute of it. I was like, man, it gets worse from here. So, I don't think this is doable. So that was the first 7 to 9 years of our marriage. It was horrible. And not just a little bit horrible. Police showing up at your house and taking all your guns, horrible. It was bad. I didn't know how to handle the despair of now being a Christian man with a destroyed marriage and family life. I didn't understand that I was incapable of living a Christian life. I thought living God's plan my way would produce what I had seen all around me all my life, the patriarchs that we see in this ministry, because that's what had been modeled, and I thought that's what I was going to get, living the Christian life. I figured out the problem, though. Laura didn't believe the way I believed. And if I could just get her to believe the things I believed, things would probably settle into place. So I began praying with a buddy of mine for God to show us the barrier that we had in our relationship, and we committed to pray for each other for 10 days. And I was excited. I was ready. I was ready for God to confirm that Laura was the problem. I just needed to hear it from him. So during this time, I'm eating lunch with my buddy and a Whataburger. And in Whataburger, they, at this time, I don't know if they still do it. I think a Chicago company bought it and ruined it. But during this time, they had the condiment lady that walked around, and, you know, it's like fast food, but you still have a service person that comes around. I was like, man, that's really cool. And this lady was jovial and friendly and kind, attentive. I was like, that is, She is not getting paid enough for what she's bringing to the table here. And so as I'm sitting there, I feel, so I may say sometimes throughout this week, I heard God tell me. I've yet at this point to hear the audible voice of God. I'm not saying it's not possible. I'm just telling you, I haven't heard it. And so when I'm saying, I heard God tell me, he's talking to my spirit. So I just want to clear that up because I may say it some. And this is one of the times that I heard God talk to me. And he said, Paul, I want you to give that lady a $20 tip. And I'm just like, that is just the stupidest thing I've ever heard. Like, she is going to think I am trivializing what she's doing, that I'm looking down on her. She was a black lady, so I thought she was going to think, I don't need your money, white boy. You know what I mean? Like, I had all these things playing out in my head of what she was going to think. And so I left the restaurant, and I go and I put my hand on the car door, and I heard his voice again. Paul, this is why my voice goes away, because you don't listen when I speak. And I'm sitting here praying with my buddy over these 10 days. Lord, speak to me. Speak to me. Show me. And he did. He spoke in a small way. I'm asking for the big thing, and he's showing me, you're not even faithful in the little things. You're asking for something big, something life-changing. You won't even listen to me when I talk to you. So I turned back around and I went and gave her the $20, and it was nothing like I thought. She was super appreciative, very thankful, and very kind. Complete opposite. So we get through that 10-day, and the answer came at the end of the 10 days. God spoke to me again, and he said, Paul, you're the reason. You're the problem. You want change in Laura, but you've left me no room to work in her life. It's not what I expected. It's not what I wanted to hear. But it was true. And unbelievably, so from this point, I decided I'm going to let go of it. Everything I was doing to this point was trying to manipulate, to push Laura into the kingdom. Laura comes in the room, boom, I'm popping the Bible out and having a little quiet time in front of her. You know, it's just like, this is horrible. This is manipulation tactics that I was using. But it was all in the hopes that God would do something with her. And so I said, you know what, I hear you, Lord, and I'm done. And I told Laura, I'm going towards the Lord. I'm going to follow Christ. And if it costs me everything, if it costs me my marriage, I'm not going to change directions. 2 weeks from that point, my wife gave her life to Christ. So God was teaching me that he didn't need me to work his plan. I just got to be a participant in what he was doing. He wanted me to believe him, not just believe in him, but to believe his words. There's still a big problem, though, in my life. I'm a drug addict, and I have no coping mechanisms. So about this same time, I start to get a call. Am I good? About this time, I get a call from some friends of mine out of nowhere to tell me that a friend of mine has passed away. And I didn't think much of it at first. I hadn't seen him since we were in high school, but we had a very similar upbringing. And both had a kind of a black sheep style lifestyle, went our own way in a very heavy, major way. And so I got the first call and said, Kyle's passed away. Kyle's passed away, and there's going to be a memorial. And so my thought is, I'm not going to that. Like, I remember Kyle from high school, and I'm going to remember Kyle how I remember Kyle, and I don't need to go sit at a memorial for somebody that I haven't seen in 10 years. And then I got the next phone call from somebody else. Did you hear that Kyle passed away? This happened, I think, 3 or 4 different times from 3 or 4 different people, but I was still hard-hearted. I mean, God was obviously speaking to me. He wanted me to go to this memorial service, but I wasn't listening. But I was listening to him in some other areas. You know, when I told you that I told Laura I'm going to pursue Christ, it was true, and I was starting to pursue Christ, and he told me to take my wife on a date. We hadn't dated in a long time. And so we got ready for this date, got a babysitter, got ourselves all ready, and we ended up, we were an hour early for our dinner reservation. And so we're walking out the door to go to the dinner reservation, and my buddy John is walking up, and he says, "I'm here to take you to..." "I'm here to take you to Kyle's memorial." And so I said, "Okay, Lord, you even got me dressed and ready." I mean, that's what it took. I'm such a stubborn, hard-hearted person. So I'm sitting there at the memorial, and, you know, his pictures are coming up, and it was sad to see his life in that way. Kyle was in Thailand at that time, and I think he was, they don't really know what happened. He was running from some people and ended up getting hit by a car while he was running. And whoever ended up going to the hospital from there, and whoever was after him, it seems like he came up to that hospital room and either threw him out of the third floor or he jumped. God spoke one thing to me that day. He said, "Paul, there's one reason that you're sitting here looking at Kyle's picture, and Kyle's not looking at yours. It's because that's what I've chosen. There's nothing you can add to this. You're here because I've given you grace, and that's it." It's my choice, and there's nothing you can do to alter my plan. I began from that point begging and pleading with God to take my addictions. I was seeking Him, but I was losing my battle to drugs. Randy and Stacy Schrader began meeting with us and attempted to help us repair the years of destruction that our marriage had caused, but my addiction was continually adding to the flames. During this time, one night I had a dream, and I'm going to share it with you. So, this is a very strange dream, and I've had a lot of dreams, and I don't know if you can relate to this or not, but there's sometimes you have dreams, and then there's sometimes you have something that's more than a dream. This was more than a dream. And so during this dream, I'm at a piece of farmland, and there's a house on this farmland, and it's lit up, and it's light. And then in the back of the farmland, there's another house, and it's dark. And I'm walking up to the farm that's light. And I walk in, and it's very comfortable inside. It's warm. There's a fire going. There's people sitting there. There's people that I know and that I'm comfortable with. There's people that I don't know, but the environment is warm. Sometime during this evening, we go out from this place, and the people from the dark house come out, and there's a huge battle on this piece of property. And it was bizarre. I mean, like, chains, and like, it was just a brutal battle. And during this time, there's like a rundown abandoned car on the property, and my buddy is in the back seat fighting with another guy in the back seat. And I go to try and pull my friend off of him, and as soon as I do, I get shot in the head with an arrow. And so I've got this arrow sticking out of my head. And so me and my buddy just start kind of limping away from this. And the only way to get back to this warm house that we're trying to get back to is to go back down by the woods and circle this wooded area to get back up. And so we circle back to this wooded area. And as we circle to come up, a wolf comes out of the woods and grabs me by the fat of my hand right here and starts trying to pull me back into the woods. And my buddy and I fight, and he pulls me away. And he pulls me away. And we enter into this, we make it back up to this warm house. And we walk in, and as soon as we walk in, everything, you know, that kind of record scratch sound, everything just kind of screeches to a halt, and everyone turns and looks. And I see the look on their face. It's like a look of dread or terror, because I have a freaking arrow sticking out of my head. And I see it, and I'm like, oh no. And I just fall, and I die. Well, I woke up, and I woke up terrified, because I knew it was more than a dream. I just didn't know what it meant. And so I asked God to give me some scripture, and I opened up to where Solomon, this is just random, I opened up where Solomon asked for wisdom. And so I said, Lord, Solomon asked for wisdom. Give me faith. And so from that point, he said, Paul, I want you to go to your dad's house in the morning. I want you to tell him the dream, and he's going to tell you what it means. And I'm like, my dad's a lot of things, okay? But he's not the dream whisperer, okay? He's not the dream guru. And I'm sitting there like, this is ridiculous. Like, I'm going to go tell him this whacked out dream that I had, and he's going to be like, all right. Why don't you get with the Lord on that? See what he has to say. Like, I've already played it out, what my dad's answer is going to be. But I want to be faithful, and so I go over there. And I share the dream with him. And I get the last word out of my mouth, and he says, Paul, I think I can tell you what that dream means. And I'm just like, okay. And he says, the battle for your life has been fought. The battle for your life has been fought, and it's over. God's taking your addiction. God's taking your addiction today. And it happened. My 25-year battle, 23, 25, whatever. It's a long time. My long addiction battle was over. God literally took it from me that day. I was free, but it was obvious that I had a God that was fighting my battles for me. So I wasn't just free, but I had a God that was fighting for me. I just needed to trust Him. Trust Him. The mess was huge. The years of sowing destruction was bringing in a harvest of pain, hurts, financial issues, and uncertainty. My life and my marriage was in shambles, but I was finally free. I was finally not just believing in a God, but I was starting to believe God. How could I not? He was actively working and bringing change to my life. The more I released, the more He took. My marriage began being healed. My body, my mind were being healed. So this is obviously not the part of faith, hope, and love. This is the part of faithlessness, but a God that was faithful. All right? This is about a hopeless person that God gave hope to, and a person that could not love, that was receiving love. So those are my credentials. Faithless, hopeless, and without love. So I'm both excited and terrified to open up my life this week. And my hope is that you can take away some pieces that will move you closer in your relationship with Jesus. My life before Christ has been riddled with pain, disappointment, and despair. I believe with all my heart in the words of Jesus, though, that He will pick up the broken pieces and let nothing be wasted. I know that nothing that I've walked through will be wasted. And I would walk through it all over again if it impacted your lives in any way. Because I love you. And my purpose is to lay down my life this week because I love you. And I want to impart that love that Christ has given me. Because it came at great cost. Not by me, but by Christ on the cross. His desire for this relationship with us drove the nails in His hand and pierced His side. But His resurrection is the only reason we have hope in this world. Joel 2:25 says, "I will repay for you the years the locusts have eaten, the great locust and the young locust, the other locust and the locust swarm. My great army I send among you." That's His promise. He's restoring my years. And I'm excited to share that with y'all this week. That's my time.